Good morning, Jillian.
Radio.
Hi, good morning.
At the tone,
this is
please
Johnson.
Record your message. When you finish recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options.
Okay, I got that. Let's see. Jillian, how are you this morning?
Good morning. I'm fine, thank you.
Okay, I called you, and I got your answering service. Maybe this evening. Maybe the lady won't. Oh, I'm late. I got to call this guy. Can you hear me now? Jillian. Where is he? Should be on here. Should be, but it's not. 954-254. Jimmy, I'm so sorry. I did wrong. Hi there. Good morning.
Good morning. That's okay. We're connected.
That's all right.
We're connected now.
No, not yet. No, not, I got to get him now. What is it? 954-254. 952. What is that number? I should have it in. So for 15 minutes, so 15 minutes. Okay, great, I got you. Where is that? I'm running late. Nate, where are you?
Hello?
947.
Here.
954-947-5497. Okay, got it. 954-947. Okay.
Nine four seven.
2 minutes late. Okay.
Joining conference now. You've been muted. Unmute yourself. Press the star key twice.
Between them, and most of them, as we on this call know, are all pretty much tap water from different cities. And what they do, they add different minerals in it, and sometimes they add other components in it to make it taste better. And the person who wrote this article was saying that, heck with some of them, especially the ones by, I think, Nestle that make energy drink. I think they make Gatorade or something. Anyway, he was saying that they go out of the way to make the tap water taste better. And he said in some cases, the tap water has so many chemicals in it, it may as well be Gatorade. So what he was saying to me is it asked another feather in our cap for having a water filtration system that can take all of the unnecessary items out of the water, all of the toxins out of the water. And then we have the impact MVP that can add the minerals in the water that used to be there, but are no longer there anymore because of the process that we're getting, you might say, recirculated water. We're getting used water. I'll put it that way. And what I mean by that is that the water we generally get is water that comes from the river or lake or wherever it's coming from. It often goes to the waterworks, but in some cases, the water that we mainly get from the waterworks is just recirculated water. The water that came from our sinks and toilets went to the waterworks through the pipes. They regenerated it by adding, you know, chloride in it, with chlorine in it, fluoride, and all those things to so-called clean it up and send it right back to us. So anything that was in the original water, meaning vitamins, minerals and the things that were traditionally in water in nature are all gone. So it makes a really case for adding things back into your water that are needed, like minerals. The Impact MVP product has 77 trace minerals in it. Now, these are minerals that once your body gets, you start noticing changes in your body. Now, some of the people take these sachets. I forgot the name of it. There's some out on the call from the company that offers the sachets. So those are great. They have minerals in them, and they have coral calcium that helps take the chlorine out of the water. But I think the advantage of the Impact MVP, and I think I know the advantage of it is that it has 77 trace minerals, and it has all the vitamins and probiotics that your body needs. So anyway, I see that Russ has joined us. Well,
yeah, I'm here.
Hold on for a second. Oh, yeah, here he is.
Yeah, good morning.
Off.
Okay, good morning. Okay, I was just kind of lingering, waiting on you. So how are you today, Russ?
Oh, okay, great, dude. Yeah, water is important. We need good water. The whole world needs good water, Jesus. So, yeah, that's a real significant subject matter to bring up this morning.
Okay, well, I turn it over to you. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Russ Johnson of Blog Talk Radio. So go ahead, Russ.
And we have Jillian with us of the Anunnaki race. Anyway, Jillian, help us out this morning. For those, for maybe somebody on here who don't know you, she's a clairvoyant from Yorkshire, and she's been around a long time helping people to understand who they are and the mission that they are performing in this incarnation on Earth. And she's been on Earth plane for a number of years. Talk about the beginning, briefly, of how we got here as human beings. And the big picture of this, and you know, with all the revelations coming out of the Pentagon, and it's going to be big for the next 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years. The information that we don't know will be coming forth. And I'm looking at Mark 4:22, for there is nothing hidden that will not be disclosed, and nothing concealed that will not be brought to the light of day. So, good morning, Mrs. Killian. You talked about the Anunnaki. Could you just briefly, in 2 minutes, talk about that? And then talk about when they came here some 400,000 years ago, what kind of experience was that? Because you were with them at that time. And then since you were with them, what happened to you? Why did you stay on Earth? Because I understand they went back, and now they're coming back again. But you tell the story. Good morning.
Oh, well, good morning, Nate. Good morning, everybody. It's a long story, and in the short version, the Anunnaki were the race of beings, and they are an immortal race who have mastered death, just as Christ did, who were essentially Christ's beings to begin with, and who deteriorated over many generations and are now much less than they were, but are struggling to get back up the ladder, so to speak, and that they have a long relationship with Earth, and that they are, in fact, the race of beings who did the genetic engineering on early humans that brought us to this state that we're in now, which is Homo sapiens sapien, or modern man. They took the existing species, they removed essentially 4 genes from DNA and replace them with 2 of their own. So this actually makes this particular extraterrestrial race our first cousins. We are directly genetically related to them. And this is one of the reasons why they have such a long-held interest in planet Earth. It is true that I came down with them on an occasion about 400,000 years ago. And that was a trip down into East Africa when they were looking for the location where they would finally build their research laboratories where all the genetic engineering was done. At that time, that area was known as the Land of Sheba. And the second son of the Enki, Ningishida, got his title from the work that he did in those science laboratories. Ningishida translates in English to Lord Gish of Sheba. And he was the second son of the Enki, the Enki being the master scientist of the Anunnaki.
Okay. Okay. Now, when you came here with them, why did you come? And what happened after you got here?
Well, when I came back the next time, about 14,500 years ago, my family were on the crossing planet, and my elder brother was many years older than me, many, many years. And he was a commander of a fleet of landing craft. The landing craft are the round ones that you see. I call them the little two-seaters, but actually each one has a crew of three in the Anunnaki force. Each of those round craft has a crew of three, and a flight is 12 craft. So he was in charge of 12 of those craft, and we landed in the Aegean, which was the original landing place of the Anunnaki. And it was at the end of an ice age. And there, as we were in orbit, making our landing orbit, we were already coming down, couldn't change the direction we were going in. And in that few hours before we landed, there was a massive thaw in the area where we did land. It was a sort of a beach area, and it was frozen. It was an ice field for us to land on. And by the time we got down, the ice had melted back sufficiently to expose these black-looking basalt rocks that stuck up like fingers all over the place. And all the craft were severely damaged when we landed. Few injuries, not too many injuries, damage to the craft so that we could not leave. We couldn't take off again. So we ended up camping up just a little way up the beach. There was a huge cave system. And we ended up camping in there for a couple of months. And then we made the journey across to what was then a well-developed Sumerian civilization in the region of the Tigris and the Euphrates. It was a developing, not well-developed, developing civilization. And we made the trek over there. And I suppose we got picked up, actually, and taken over there.
By whom?
Well, by the other Anunnaki who were on the planet.
Oh, I see.
Who were living over in Sumeria. What came to be known to us as Sumeria.
But that
was
your second
time. A long time before Sumeria. Hmm?
But that was your second time.
That was my second visit to Earth.
But the first visit to Earth, let's talk about that briefly. They came here. Were they looking for the gold the first visit that you came here with them?
When I came 400,000 years ago, they had already been here for thousands of years, mining the gold. The original group of astronauts, the Gigi and the Enki and the representative of the family Enlil, had been on the planet mining for the gold. And it was by the time I came 400,000 years ago, that was at the point in time, roughly, I'm giving you a rough time frame. That was about the point in time when the Ajiji rebelled and said they wouldn't dig the gold anymore. And so they decided to try and do some genetic engineering on the local animal population to try and domesticate or alter some of them to actually take down the mines and do the mining for them. And they tried that for a very long time and were not successful with it. And so it was then that they started work on the genetic engineering on the Earth humans,
right,
which resulted in Homo sapiens. But this
right.
is there's tens of thousands of years of Earth years. It might be worth pointing out that one Anunnaki year equals 3,600 Earth years, approximately. So a 10,000-year span for an Anunnaki, for an Earth human, is only a 3-year span for an Anunnaki. It sounds like horrendous lengths of time, but to them it is not.
So you are saying that in essence that the time that we follow here on Earth and the time they follow on Mars,
the time the celestials follow it,
it's a big difference.
Yes, it's
big difference.
Yes.
Okay, not the same.
Time on any planet is dependent upon how long it takes that planet to orbit its sun. That's how you measure time on any planet.
All right.
And that's how you measure the degrees in a circle. We have 360
right.
degrees in a circle because it used to take 360 days for Earth to go one circuit or one day and night period to go around the sun.
Mm.
Now, of course,
okay.
it takes 365 and a half days.
Okay. And an Anunnaki year is what? How long?
3,600 Earth years. 3,600 Earth years, approximately.
All right. What's the big deal coming up in 2024, 2025? What's the big deal? What is everybody talking about?
Beginning of 26. What is anticipated is a break in the space-time continuum, which brings to an end the time for human history. I believe, and I'm not sure about this because nobody has confirmed it with me, but I should say not believe. I surmise that this is in reference to the biblical time and half a time. When I can't remember all that was being said at that time in the Bible. I can't remember it, and I haven't found it. But I know in there it says that it talks about a time and half a time. And this, a time and a time and half a time. And this would equate to the actual time of human history. Human history began 6,000 years ago when rulership was handed over to the human race and to be self-governing. And at that time, the Anunnaki were still on the planet. They had been calculating time according to their counting, according to celestial time. But when they handed over rulership, self-rule essentially, to the Earth humans that they had developed, they gave them then a new calendar and a new beginning of time counted as we count it today. In other words, 24-hour days and 360-some years days in the year. So that time, that way of counting time, began about 6,000 years ago, and it is estimated that it will come to an end at the end of 225 or the beginning of 226.
So
when there will be a break in the space-time continuum.
So what time will we be using in 2 years then? What time?
I have no idea.
Okay.
Because
all right.
it's starting new. It is very possible because of these things that are happening on the planet. We're looking at, there's no one particular thing that changes everything. It's rather a coming together of many roads that bring you to one point where something changes. And right now we are looking at the socioeconomic, the political, and the physical and geophysical changes going on the planet and throughout the universe, because this is not something that's just happening to Earth. This is a change that is rippling throughout the universe. It's a recreational phase that the universe is going through, which it does every few millennia. And so when this happens, it probably means for Earth, as we know it, as normal Earth humans and the ones who will be continuing on this Earth as we know it, what it probably means is that we will have massive changes economically and politically falling into place, which will not necessarily be for the better, and that we will also see a huge change in the environment that we're living in because of a final surge of geophysical events, earthquakes, volcanoes, so on and so forth, tidal waves, major changes of the coastlines due to tidal waves happening. Much has happened at the time of the Great Flood. If you think of the world, Noah's world, and how it changed because of the Great Flood, and you think of what that must have meant to the people, we're probably facing something very similar to that. And that the Bible, I think, tells us that there would be 3 days of darkness when the sun will not rise and so on. And I think this may possibly be talking about a polar shift. We already see that the pole has moved many degrees from due north. And I understand that we have a north pole and a south pole, which are pretty permanent fixtures on the planets. But then there are other lesser polar points in the magnetic field dotted around the planet. I believe that they call them some other name, and I believe there are 6 or 8 of them where the magnetic field intensifies and you have a minor polar effect. But we're talking primarily, when we talk about polar shift, about the North Pole and the South Pole and their movement. Guys told me a long time ago it would be a 27-degree shift. And I think we're already at like 20 degrees. So it might not be that big a deal as we feel it on the planet. But there is certainly a weakening of our magnetic fields that's been going on for a number of years now. The Earth's magnetic fields are getting weaker, which in a way makes it, I believe, more possible for a polar shift. Plus, more importantly, as the magnetic field weakens, we are more subject to solar flares and the effect of solar radiation. So there's a lot going on geophysically on the planet, which is not unnatural, which happens every few thousand years on the planet. And we just happen to be living in the time when one of these great events is happening. And that's combined with the universal fact that things are changing at this time in history. So it's the end of time, the end of time for Earth humans. Doesn't mean we're all dead and gone, or even that it's an extinction level event coming. It simply means that the old way is changing and a new way is beginning. And a very probable reason for that is because after these events culminate, the Earth will very likely be at least 4 degrees farther away from the sun. That means that we will have many more days in a year, and we will need to begin with a new calendar and a new way of counting. So that will begin a new time. Am I making sense to you, Russell?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
There's a lot of specificity dealing with all of what you have to say, but we don't have time to cover today. But I just wanted people to know that you say that you have been incarnated in and out of Earth's existence for many, 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 many thousands of years. How many times do you think you've been here, that you've lived a life, you've gone, you come back, you go and keep coming, going and coming? How many times do you think?
Oh, dozens.
Dozens,
when
okay.
I came here as an Anunnaki, remember, I was not in the habit of dying. I've only been dying and reincarnating for the last 4,500 years.
Okay.
Not very long at all, but I've probably done a dozen lives in that time.
Okay. Now, you are saying that we, as human beings, don't necessarily have to call it an end of life after we leave. We can always come back or be reincarnated in some other form. Is that what you're saying to me?
Well, I think what I'm trying to say is there is no beginning and no end of life. Life is forever. What there are different locations in which you experience life. So right now we are experiencing life on this planet, and we arrived on this planet at this point in time in a specific way. We arrived here by being bred by two other humans, one of whom gave physical birth to us, and we grew up and live on this planet. Eventually, hopefully, we will all evolve to that Christ consciousness level where, as Christ told us, we can do everything that he can do and more. And when we arrive at that level, we will no longer need to be physically born because we will be able to recreate our bodies at will and go onto any planet in any time frame that we choose to have that planetary experience. So this, right now, we are born physically and we die physically and we step into the continuation of our life on the other side of death. But a time comes when you become an immortal. And when that time arrives depends on how much work you're willing to put into it. Christ told us how to do it, right? He gave us all the instructions on how we need to live to evolve into that frequency level. And when we become that frequency level, when we become beings of humility and unconditional love and can do all those things, one of the things is that we will have mastered death, as the Anunnaki have done.
Okay. So you have not mastered death yet, even though you say you an Anunnaki. Yes.
Well,
no?
At this moment in time, in this lifetime, no. I was born just like everybody else, and I'm going to die. And I've been doing that for 4,500 years. But when I die this time and get to go home, which I've not been able to do for 4,500 years, simply because of the logistics of it, right? So I continued my life experience multiple times on this planet, just, you might say, for something to do, right? Because we're all doing something all the time. There is never a time when a soul is not either in a body or out of a body, and is not working. We are, all souls are working always, always and forever. And we are always alive, either in a body or out of a body, in the physical sense that we know it, right? So it's a matter of using these lifetimes on or off the planet, in or out of a body, in order to advance our knowledge, our understanding, and our wisdom, so we don't actually need to come here again.
Okay. Why are you keep coming back for 14, 15 times? Why?
Because I couldn't go home. I was trapped, as many others were, not just me, was trapped on this planet. There was no way to go home. When you are living on a planet, you are, you might say, anchored to that planet. You are experienced life here, and so you anchor yourself to this planet. So you don't float off or go out of your body and forget to come back. You are anchored here, right? And there has to be a way for you to leave the planet. And so long as you are experiencing here, there was no way I could go back to Nibiru for 3,600 years, plus some, because I missed the going out and it had to be a full circuit and back. They have just come back. Their nearest passing was in 2017. Well, that was their nearest passing to Earth in this orbit. And they will go round the back of the sun now. And in about 3 to 350 years or so, they will come back out on their orbit, out from behind the sun. And that will be the near access point when I can go home.
Okay, so you have another 300 or 400 years here before you can go back home.
Yes.
Is that right? Okay.
Yes.
Now,
yes.
Above us is the Galactic Command, and you're saying that the Galactic Command has a spaceship at least a mile, 2 miles long, at least, with hundreds of thousands of people, or thousands of people, may I say, and David is there, why can't you just join them on the Galactic Command above us?
Well, first, Russell, I have never said anything about the Galactic Command because I don't know anything about the Galactic Command.
Oh, okay.
I only know about the Anunnaki. And what I have said about the Anunnaki is that both David and his brother have ships orbiting this planet all the time, right? One sits normally to the east, the other sits predominantly to the west. And on the 21st of October every year, which was just 2 days ago, they change places simply for a change of view, right? And I do go back and forth onto those ships, but they're not going anywhere. They're only orbiting Earth. I have used this time that I was left here and trapped here to join humanity's cycle of reincarnation for the experience, for the learning. This is a great teaching planet. We're all in school when we're down here, and it is a wonderful opportunity for us to learn.
All right.
So, yes, I do go back and forth to the ships and always have done, but
okay.
Only the ones that are sitting in orbit. They're not going anywhere. They're just sitting here.
Oh, so either you can stay on the ship and hang out and have a good time, or you can come down here and deal with the arrows of outrageous fortune that we have to deal with down here. Is that right?
Right.
Okay, so yeah,
correct.
But you can't go back home yet. Another 300.
Right.
300 years
That's
or so.
Right.
Okay. Now, when David and the rest of them are out there observing us, it's very much like the moon. The moon is not a planet. The moon is an observatory, right? There are entities living not on the moon, but also inside of the moon. Do you know that? Or are you aware of that?
Yes, I do know that.
And
the moon is people say it's an artificial body, right? And they have all their reasons, but that's not true. It's just as natural as the Earth is natural. Yes. It's the result of a previous collision billions of years ago. There was a collision that created both the Earth and the moon that orbits it the asteroid belt. They were all created in one massive collision with a planet called Tiamat.
Okay.
And this is ancient cosmology, and now it's coming to light. Archaeological findings are proving this now.
Okay, but the astronauts, Neil Armstrong and others, Buzz Aldrin, say when they went to the moon, they saw other entities there. As a matter of fact, even William Tompkins said this.
Yeah.
He's saying that
it's true.
When they went to the reptilians were there in great numbers with massive spaceships there parked on the crater of the moon, and they were asked not to come back again. Did you read anything about what Tompkins has said?
I didn't read that particular piece, but what he's talking about is true. There have been moon bases for thousands of years. When the Anunnaki were mining for gold, a couple of million years ago when they started mining for gold, their refueling station where they shipped the gold back to Nibiru was on Mars, right? But their way station was on the moon. They rocketed the gold from here to the moon just in cargo rockets, and then they could send larger amounts because of the lower gravity from the moon to Mars. And in Mars, it was loaded onto the, starships, the interstellar ships that could take it all the way back to Nibiru. So, yeah, there's been people on the moon for eons of time.
Okay. So now we have people on the moon. We have people on Mars, people on Jupiter, people in Andromeda, right? All those places. So the concept of interstellar travel has been conquered. And how does that happen? So the scientist here on Earth says you cannot go faster than 186,000 miles a second, which means it's almost impossible to do travel from galaxy. Go ahead.
Yeah, but I would agree, and I believe William Tompkins said this very, very well when he said everything that all these super intelligent people have been taught is just a bunch of lies. I would actually soften that a little bit by saying it's not all lies, but it is all earth-based. And so things that are true on earth are not necessarily true somewhere else. And it is certainly not true that you cannot travel beyond the speed of light. In fact, beyond the speed of light travel, although it can be hazardous, is fairly simple in its process. You simply have to have the circular mathematics to calculate a clear path with nothing in it from point A to point B, create an artificial tunnel, if you like, and then bend the light towards you. This is not a hard thing to do. It's a simple process of alternating the north-south polarity of every light particle that's passing you. And that folds it up like a fan, and traveling from here to Mars is like me walking across the garden. It's a nothing trip. I'm not sure how long it takes. I know it only takes 3 weeks to get to Andromeda.
I see.
You only take 3 weeks to get to the other side of our universe, pretty much. So probably it's a 2.5-3 hour drive to Mars. Certainly no more than 3 hours to Mars.
Okay.
And it's probably generally speaking, you would not do faster than the speed of light travel within a solar system because right. There are too many planets and bodies. It's generally only when you're covering deep space.
Right.
There are some species, and I've taken a couple of photographs of their ships coming in. And I'm sure anybody who's seen pictures of UFOs have seen those photographs where all the photograph is a very bright, fuzzy sort of light, maybe white or maybe has some hint of color, reddish, pinkish color to it. And it's just like a fluff ball of this light. And then slowly you see the shape of the ship inside the light manifesting. These are the space-faring species who know how to make space jumps. They actually jump from kind of like, you know, in Star Trek when they would say, beam me up, Scotty. You're here 1 minute and you're there the next minute. There are plenty of space-faring species who don't even have to travel beyond the speed of light. They simply move from one place to another in a jump. They just jump from one to the other. And it disintegrates the molecules and reestablishes them.
Right. So I know we're covering a lot of territory, but when recently the Pentagon have said, and some other scientists have said, that there are UFOs being identified here on Earth, are they talking about something like this?
Well, has the U.S. government been hiding pieces from crashed UFOs? That's the question being asked because of a blockbuster story published in the New York Times.
The Times acknowledge what our I-team has reported for the past few years, namely that a secret Pentagon study looking into UFOs is still underway after all. But the newspaper story drew a rebuke from one of the sources it quoted, former Nevada Senator Harry Reid. George Knapp has this exclusive story.
You've said about you don't think it's little green men, and we had a lot of speculation about where these vehicles are from. They're far more advanced than anything known to us. Is it possible that nobody really, there's no one who knows the ultimate answer?
I think now, and the reason I'm so terribly interested in this is I don't think no one has the answers.
Former Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid has spoken with us about UFO issues more times than with any other media organization on and off the record. And in each of those exchanges, we've asked about the persistent stories of crashed saucers, recovered materials, dark secrets, the same rumors that started with the famous Roswell incident in 1947 and which resurfaced in 1989 with our news reports about alleged alien technology stashed in the Nevada desert near Area 51. On the same day that Bob Lazar's tale was unveiled to the world, Reed told us this in a live interview.
Well, you know, George, I'll have to look at this. I have heard about this exact story. I've heard about it as kind of a preview of your program. I'm visiting with you once before. I'm anxious to get the facts. I think it's something we should look into.
Over the years, Reed visited Area 51 several times, but whatever he saw out there, he's never commented. The latest report from the New York Times has generated a worldwide wave of media coverage and public interest. The Times confirmed what we've reported since 2017, that contrary to the Pentagon statements, a secret study of UFOs, or as they're now called, UAPs, is ongoing.
So we are asking people to do their own research. Go back to the New York Times expose, if you will, and get that article and read it. It was, you know, all over the New York Times. It was really big and tension-getting, if you will. And that's one. Two, I would say that if you want to pull up Bob Lazar, you just mentioned him, pull up his stories on YouTube and see what he's saying. He's been out there talking about Area 51, Groom's Lake, S4, and all of that. It's a lot of information. I don't want to confuse anybody. But Corey Good and David Wilcox, as well as Tompkins, those names, remember those names, pull them up and see what they're saying. Always, you can find them on Beyond Belief with George Norrie, on Cosmic Connections, the Ancient Aliens, on and on and on. What would you recommend you refer people to look at the history of the Anunnaki? Would you say look at Sitchin's books, Zachariah Sitchin's?
Right.
Go ahead. Yeah. Talk about that for a bit.
Yes, Zachariah Sitchin. Zachariah Sitchin, if you want to know about the Anunnaki history with Earth, is the only one I would suggest you read, because since Mr. Sitchin's death, there has been an absolute plethora of people out there who apparently know everything all about the Anunnaki, who they are, what they are, so on and so forth. And I think they're making it up as they go along. I don't think they really know what they're talking about. And none of them were coming out and saying this while Mr. Sitchin was alive. It all started after he died. The more serious ones take reviews of his actual work. Others just make up an interesting array of stories. The reason, I think, is because Mr. Sitchin was one of just a handful of scholars worldwide, maybe not more than five or six men, on the whole planet, who can actually say they are true experts in the ancient language, Aramaic, Hebrew, the Sumerian languages, the Rosetta Stone languages. Sitchin was a scholar, and he was one of just half a dozen in the whole world. And instead of hiding in a library, spending his life just doing the research, he actually went out into the field. He went to the sites written about in these ancient documents. He visited them. He found the physical evidence as well as the written evidence that he was translating. And he put it all together in a whole series of books called the Anunnaki Chronicles. The first book is The 12th Planet. And they are fairly thick paperback books. If you are not a great reader and you don't like big, thick, heavy books, right, then there is one little book he wrote later on called The Cosmic Code. And that Cosmic Code is like a Reader's Digest condensed version of the main things that he found from all his research and wrote about in all his other books. And that little book is not more than, maybe 100 pages. And it's very concise. It's got excellent diagrams in, and it's accurate information. It's true history. It's a true history of the Anunnaki and their relationship with humans and the planet Earth. And okay, I can promise you it's true.
Right. So, good. Then we've been 45 minutes. I'm going to turn it back to Nathan in just a second. I just want you to say to people that with the Pentagon, the New York Times, Corey Good, David Wilcox, Tompkins, and all of these, and even Bob Lazar, all these people who are coming to the table now, disclosing all of this, are telling the truth. Now, even President Eisenhower, Ronald Reagan, JFK, all of them were denied the truth. So if you want to look at a little bit of history about the denial, if you will, then all you want to do is go to the DisclosureProject.com, the DisclosureProject.com with a guy called, Dr. Stephen Greer. He's been researching this for the last 40 years, and Julian's husband, George Green, was researching this for at least 40 or 50 years, since the 1960s. And he has a website. He crossed over a couple of years ago. He has a website called nohoax.net that a lot of his material is still there. Would you like to comment before I turn it over to Nate for any questions that they may have? Let me just do this, say that JFK said it this way.
How plausible is the idea that Kennedy was assassinated because of his efforts to learn about UFOs and extraterrestrial life? Also, did Kennedy learn about extraterrestrial life during the World War II era as a result of his service with U.S. Naval Intelligence?
Okay, that's a good question.
Okay.
And you can answer that question.
Well,
go right here.
Really quickly. There's more than one thing here, so don't believe everything you read, but it is true that we are not alone. It is true that there are extraterrestrials living and working with our governments around the world on the planet today. And it is true that these people who are coming out as whistleblowers and telling you their stories are telling you the truth, or at the very least, what they believe is the truth, what their perception of their experience was. And that's the best truth that anybody can tell. So there is a great deal to be learned from this. Do I think learning about the extraterrestrials on the planet Earth is the most important thing we can be doing? Well, not really, because it's just another part of the experience of the physical life on this planet. It is interesting. We should know about it. We should have some knowledge, but it should not, I think, necessarily be our individual focus, because what are the chances of any one of us who are involved in this group today actually getting on a spaceship and going to Mars? I should think it's a very small likelihood that we're going to do that. So yes, it's good to get the truth disclosed, and it's good to know what the truth is. But our real focus needs to be inward on ourselves and our own spiritual progression. And always remember that when we progress far enough spiritually, these secrets will not be withheld from us in any case, because we will have access to them all. I think that's all I really want to comment on it.
Okay, well, Luke 8:17, Mark 4:22, both of them say history is being told and the truth is unfolding. So there's nothing that will be kept from us. So the truth is coming upon us. Nate, I really appreciate the time. I just want to briefly cover all the revelations that have been coming to the fore, if you will, with Fox News and the UFO disclosures that are happening about Area 51. And they are, and as the young lady says, there are a number of species here on planet Earth, the reptilians, the Greys, the Nordics, the Palladians, and many others that we don't know about. So they are among us. So, Nate, I'm going to turn it back to you.
Nate. Okay. Thank you, Russ. Thank you, Jillian. Very interesting. There are a lot of, even in the scriptures, references to things that, I guess, unless there are some other entities, wouldn't make sense. Like I think in Genesis where it says the sons of God, I guess, married with the daughters of men. Okay, if Adam and Eve, according to the biblical scripture, were the only two here, where did the daughters of God, the daughters of men, come from? That was one thing. And then there was several references of the wheel within a wheel, and I think beings, some entities that came from other places that was in the scriptures. So were these references to what we now call extraterrestrials?
Yes.
Well, yes, I would say so. Jacob's ladder is a wonderful story about the word angel, as you know, Nate, literally means messenger. And so you have the wonderful story of Jacob's ladder with the messengers, the angels, going up and down to the spaceship and bringing down whatever they were bringing. The Bible is full of references to the extraterrestrials, Ezekiel's wheels within wheels, as you mentioned. It's throughout the Bible. The Nephilim, the Watchers, and right at the very beginning in Genesis, when the gods, plural, the Elohim, which is the plural, were walking and talking together in the garden. I mean, this is a whole foundation, and if we start with that foundation of, wait a minute, who were these gods, plural, that were walking and talking in the Garden of Eden? It's a big question that we need to ask, because we've been conditioned to wipe all that out, to say, okay, believe the Bible and believe it's all the word of God, one God, which I believe there is, one source for all creation. But then in the Bible stories, we have multiple characters, more than one of them taking the role of a God. So yeah, there's a lot to think about.
So in essence, I was just saying, in essence, that we have been deceived and all the information has been hidden and kept from us, because the powers that be in control, Fauci, etc., didn't want us to know that we were among other species of the universe, being not only assisted, but guided and directed and interfaced with. Go ahead.
Okay, I see. We got a couple people that are unmuted. Dora was the first, so go ahead, Dora.
Good morning to everyone on the Linda Carr call. Thank you for calling on me. Good morning, Jillian. And
good morning.
And good morning to both of you. Wow, it's a lot you covered today, and I really appreciate this call. I'm really amped up now because of the conversation, but so I want to ask I want to share something, and then if I don't take too long, I ask a question. So I know that there's something going on in the solar system, and I had a personal experience, and this is the truth. I know there are other beings that are up there, and when I say up there, I'm going to share what happened to me one morning. I woke up at maybe 5 a.m, and I had been at a family gathering, and myself and my cousin and his wife fell asleep. They rode there with me, so I was bringing them home. This was in Michigan. It was really, really cold in the wintertime, briskly cold. And I was driving home. The sun was going wherever it goes, and I mean the moon was going wherever it goes, and it was daylight by then. I'm driving down the street. I come to a red light. As I approach the red light, I'm looking up in the sky because the caution light came and then red, so I wasn't paying attention forward. Excuse me. I was looking up in the sky, and I saw something moving. At the moon, like on the moon, in the moon, outside the moon, something like that. Well, the whatever it was went from one side to the middle and then turned like to look to which would be my left. I could see long hair. I could see this. I could see long hair, and it looked like wings on the back or something like wings. And I'm freaking out. I'm not saying anything to anybody, and I'm looking at this. And this entity, whatever it was, turned and then disappeared, like flew around to the back of this moon and disappeared. And I'm driving, the light turns green, and I'm just totally done. And I was wide awake, sober, everything. And so I go on, to drive forward. And my cousin's wife, who was sitting next to me, I didn't want to share this with either one of them. I didn't want to feel like I'm losing my mind. So before I could get the thought clear, she said, I'm going to have to share this because I think that I'm losing my mind. She said exactly what I explained to you. And when I just pulled over to the side and we both cried like babies hugging. And I'm like, I didn't want to say anything. I thought I was the only one experiencing this. We both had the same experience at the same time, saw the exact same thing. And I know that it was true because she explained and described everything that I saw.
Okay. Let me say this for people who need to do a little bit more homework. If you go to the Muslim religion, the Black Muslim, if you will, by Elijah Muhammad. It's called the Mother Plane, P-L-A-N-E. You might want to get that, the Mother Plane. And then there's another book that Farrakhan has endorsed that's called UFOs and the Nation of Islam, where he talks about being on many spaceships many times. And so if you want to do a little more homework to confirm that we are not alone. Go ahead, kid. I'm finished.
Tell me again Farrakhan's book, please.
His book is called UFOs and the Nation of Islam, The Source, Proof, and Realities of the Wheels. And you can get that on Amazon. That's available on Amazon. And so The Mother Plane by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad is also available for you to read. Anybody
Thank
else?
You.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yes, we have... Mahatma.
Yes, greetings, Olympic Arts family. Happy Monday here today. I'm so happy to hear this conversation. I don't remember. I know the brother who's speaking now, but I don't remember the lady's name. But I'm happy that you all brought about years ago when Farrakhan used to talk about the mothership coming in and those kind of and UFOs and whatnot. And it also made me think when you all were saying, you were asking who were those beings in those days and those times. And it made me think that those were enlightened beings. Those were gods. There's so many. We are all gods and goddesses. And it makes me feel a way too sometimes when I hear people they're making their prayers and they're saying, Father this and Father that and Father this and thank you, Father, for that and thank you, Father, for this and that. What about the mother? Was the mother here, the mother that helped you here too to make it here on the planet, you know? So I have a family member who didn't even want to call my father anymore when she started saying God the Father, you know. But it has been a lot of things that have been taught to us and told to us. That I remember in the 80s, I was a chairperson for the region of a committee called the Committee to Remove Racial Images that Attempt to Betray the Divine. And we went down to Dallas, Texas, and we parade the streets to ask the churches to take away these images that have attempted to betray the divine. They said, the question was, what would this do to your mind if you had this image in front of you for so many years? You know, what does this do to your mind? And the planet, when we talk about Adam and Eve, I think about too, when the planet first began, the first people that were here were not Adam and Eve. There were other people here too. So let's grow and continue to do our research and study and share with one another whatever we learn so it could help us to, like, this call is so much about the waking up to who we are. All right, so.
All right, thank you. Jillian, I think we're at the top of the hour. Nate, we're at the top of the hour, so we don't want to take up all of your time.
Okay, no problem. We have one more person unmuted.
Okay.
If it's okay, I'll call her. Okay, Jeannie.
Okay, thank you, Nate. I want to thank Jillian and Russ for lifting the fog of ignorance for us. But I did have a question, and because Jillian is a clairvoyant, I wanted to ask if you both have heard about Bratzo, B-R-A-C-O. He's a gazer. They have live streaming. He's all over the world doing this gazing. And I found out about him about a decade ago. And lately, he's been having live streaming, because of the COVID. But now that it's lifted, he's begun to do his gazing everywhere, Switzerland, Germany, wherever. And I just wanted to know, where does he fit in the scheme of things? And have you heard of him?
I haven't heard of him. So I really can't answer your question. I mean, when you say he's doing gazing, what is it exactly that he's doing? Do you know?
He just stands on a platform and he gazes into the audience. And there are people from all around the world, and even the streaming. I like the streaming because it's more personal. It's right here in your room. But he just stands there. He doesn't say anything. He doesn't touch anybody. He doesn't proclaim to be of any religious sect or anything like that. And he doesn't say anything about him. Why is he here? Why is he doing this? Where did he get the power? But the people that receive his gaze, they say all different kinds of things, that it helps them from A to Z,
now I understand what you're saying. And I've never heard of this man, or I take it it's a man. And I'm not exactly sure, but I can tell you this, because I will only tell you things that I actually know, right? I won't make things up. If I don't know it, I'll say I don't, and I don't know this man. But I do know that about 1992, a colleague and I were working together on a project, and we had a visitation from two beings who came from a much higher dimension. They told us they existed on the seventh plane of experience, and they came to give us light, literally, to put light into our physical bodies, because they said, you know, the work you do is about putting light out, and therefore we have come to help you with this by putting light in. And they said, as this time progresses and we move towards the end of the human time cycle, this historic cycle, there will be more people like you, meaning like my colleague and I, who are putting light out to other people. And I did have this experience once myself when I was invited to do a lecture, and this was in that 11-11 convergence year, whatever that was. And I was asked to do this lecture, and when I got up to do the lecture, my extraterrestrial friend said to me, no, don't talk about what you're going to talk about. Just talk about anything for a few minutes, because we're going to have an event. And I said, what's the event? They said, well, just stand there. And there were a couple of hundred people attending this lecture. So I stood in front of these people, and I had no idea what was happening. But all of a sudden, I felt my legs start to shake. And I thought, oh, this is weird. So I closed my eyes, right, to try and see what was going on. I was subsequently told after about, this went on about 10 minutes, and then everything went back to normal physically with me, and I started doing a lecture for these people. I was told by members of the audience afterwards that I completely disappeared during that 10 minutes, and that there was nothing but a ball of light in front of them, and that light kept shooting out in fingers and hitting them like long fingers of light, hitting them in the chest. And then, like you're saying about people in the audience, there were various reports on how this helped these people. So that was quite amazing to me. So I can imagine that now there are many other people on the planet. I guess I want to use the word channeling, using themselves as conduits for more light to come down. And as the eyes are the windows of the soul, and as we do all forms of healing with a convergence of the two eyes and the third eye coming together like a laser beam, I would say that this person is probably doing across-the-board healing sessions and giving more light, offering more light, literally, to these people. Does that make sense to what you know of it?
Yeah, very similar to that would be the Philadelphia experiment. That's all documented. That's a motion picture, as a matter of fact. And that's around 1941, 42, somewhere around 42, 43, where they took a whole ship, you know, a troop ship, and made it disappear. And all that, Al Billick and all those people were involved in that. But that's another big story, that how people can use that mind's energy, like Russell Togg and Hal Puthoff and Ingo Swann, when they talk about remote viewing, that they have made that a science. That's a 99.9% true documented evidence that that's the science, that people can do that. So telepathy, remote viewing, all this stuff is just coming to the fore. So as Jesus said in John 14:12, all the things I have done, you can do, and even more of these things you will be able to do if you were to use your energies correctly. So back to you, Jillian, and Nate, and whomever.
Okay, we have also Bhavani unmuted.
Hello. Just wanted to share a tidbit about Brazzo. He was taught by a magnificent healer, and as a matter of fact, his mom made him take her to this other healer because he didn't believe in him, and she insisted, and she got healed, and then he started trying to figure out what was going on, and then he started hanging out with him, and the guy started teaching him. Then the guy passed on and passed all his healing, not his healing ability, but all his, you know, reputation and everything through him. And he's written a book about it. And at first he was just trying to heal individuals, and then he was told to just go out and stand in front of them and stare. Mm. And that was my understanding is he is sending love light through his eyes to people.
Yes. Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah. That's exactly what I was trying to explain to you in my very long-winded way. Yeah. And I am prepared to say that is probably exactly what he is doing. And it's a great gift to have.
Right. Anyway, Dr. Sebi could do some of those things, remember? People, Dr. Sebi and others. But anyway, Nate, did you want to continue? Did you want to talk about Dr. Fauci, any of those people?
Well, there is a documentary running, a movie on Dr. Fauci. How it's called Dr. Fauci, but on Dr. Fauci.
Dr. Fauci.
Well, if you want to take 5 minutes and listen to the movie, because they said they're going to take it down pretty soon, because it's been out only a couple of weeks and it's got 1.2 million views and no major television, CBS, NBC, ABC, CNN series. No one is covering it. They're trying to hide it. And if you want to see it and listen to what's happening, here's a 5-minute clip if you want to do it. If you don't,
yeah,
it's okay.
Go ahead. That would be great.
Okay.
As he prepares to retire from his position as White House chief medical advisor, Dr. Anthony Fauci tells ABC News he, quote, gave it everything he had. Our next guest believes that by giving us his all, Fauci actually harmed the United States. Jeff Hayes is the producer of the new documentary film, The Real Anthony Fauci, The film is based on the book of the same name by Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Jeff, thanks for being here. Dr. Fauci is a polarizing figure. Some people love him, others dislike him. I'm assuming you believe that his leadership at NIH during the COVID crisis was a big mess. Share with us the main point of your film.
Yeah, it was more than a big mess. It was devastating, and not just to the United States, but to really the entire world. Anybody who followed his recommendations was severely damaged. This book that Bobby wrote, The Real Anthony Fauci, was a phenomenon this year. The book was the most suppressed book of my lifetime. It sold a million copies. It was 17 weeks on the New York Times bestseller list. And in spite of that, there's still not been one major media review of the book. Bookstores wouldn't carry it. It was, you know, a phenomenon that it sold a million copies. When I read the book, For me, Fauci was just a guy who appeared, you know, at Trump's side, and he's avuncular, grandfatherly. I liked him as he spoke. He seemed very rational. And then things started to not add up, his changing his mind on whether mask worked or not, some little things. But then when I read the book and read what he had actually done and what his history was, I was stunned.
I think the main criticism most people have about Fauci is the negative consequences, of course, of the lockdown policies that he supported. Now, he said he had nothing to do with school shutdowns, but tell us more about that. What did you find?
Yeah, so the story starts in 1984 when he took over the infectious and allergy department of the NIH. And it was a small department, and he was a bureaucrat. But then the AIDS epidemic hit, and he jockeyed to get AIDS assigned to his department. And in his career, he has given out, distributed $930 billion. So you can imagine the power base that he built, and the people that disagreed with him, their careers were ruined. He backed AZT, at the time the most expensive drug ever been created. It was $10,000 for a course. It was the most deadly chemotherapy drug that had ever been introduced to mankind. He had no interest in off-label drugs that doctors were telling him were working. Instead, put it all in AZT. The results have been devastating. You roll that forward with COVID, he did the same thing again, where he had no interest in what doctors were telling him about ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, that they were working with patients. He wouldn't do studies on those. He sidelined those drugs, made them unavailable to doctors, instead backed remdesivir, which was an Ebola drug that was so deadly they quit using it for Ebola patients. Nurses started calling it run death is near instead of remdesivir.
Well, and we know he refuses to acknowledge the virus came from the Wuhan lab, and he's denied that he was involved in gain-of-function research being done in Wuhan with U.S. government money. So what did you discover about that?
Well, it's over half of his budget. The reason he's the highest paid employee in the federal government, out of over 4 million employees, higher than the president, higher than Supreme Court justices, is because he's got two budgets. He has his regular NIAID budget, but they've also added $2.2 billion a year in annual budget from the Defense Department to do this research. This is stunning. I think if, you know, after the midterms, if Rand Paul gets subpoena power, you're going to see exactly what's happened. But the amount of money that is being divided up at the NIH, literally by the scientists themselves, is $350 million. Under the Freedom of Information Act, we've been able to get a list of who gets that money, but not who paid it, not the amount, and where, you know, what it's being paid for. All of this is going to come to light. But this is the power base that he wields.
Okay, well, we'll see what is going to happen with the midterms and if there will be accountability afterwards. The film is The Real Anthony Fauci. Producer Jeff Hayes, how and where can people view it?
You can see it online at therealanthonyfaucimovie.com. And we're having to play a little cat and mouse. People are trying to block the film. Of course, it's being, you know, silenced on social media. So if people like it, we're asking them to share it. But it's up for free for 9 more days at therealanthonyfaucimovie.com.
Okay. Thank you, Jeff, for being with us today. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Back to you, Nate.
Oh, okay. Okay. Thank you for bringing that out, Russell.
Sure.
Okay. Well, we are over time, but it was well worth it anytime Jillian is on and we get into these discussions. We always have a lot of people that want to ask questions. So thank everybody that asked questions today, and we look forward to Russell and Jillian coming back anytime. We get a lot of response, you know, from you guys' appearance. So thank you, and we look forward to seeing everybody tomorrow. So have a good day, and again, thank you, Russ, and thank you, Jillian.
Jillian, thanks.
Thank you.
For being on. Appreciate you.
All right.
Thank you. Bye-bye, okay. Everybody.
Okay, goodbye. Okay.
The organizer has ended this meeting. Goodbye.